Going online is super, super easy and people want quick answers. So that's number one thing why I do it as a patient and why other patients do it. There's a sense of empowerment. When you learn something, it gives people a sense of control over their own well-being. The next thing is variety. There's a ton of different sources. And so people are bound to find something that's relatable. And then there's trust. But ultimately, I think the problem that we're probably going to flesh out is that the web is very impersonal.
This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, Do Your Research, How to Properly Educate Yourself About Your Health. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my beautiful co-host from Miami, Dr. Justin Dubin. How's it going, buddy?
Dale, let's go, baby. Beautiful. Happy, Dale. Happy Sunday, you know. There's a change here in Miami. I started noticing we're at the end of August. We're about to hit September. People are coming back. You know,
the annual
people who live here half year, you know, they're coming back from the Hamptons. They're coming back from, you know, Martha's Vineyard or the Berkshires or the Jersey Shore, wherever it may be. They're all making their trip back.
The so, pilgrimage. You know,
yep. And you've experienced it before, but, you know, I think there's benefits.
The traffic just picks up.
Exactly.
The traffic just picks up, man. You know,
it's going to be hard to get into some of the restaurants is what happens. You know, it's going to be difficult, but it's good to see some faces that I haven't seen in a while. You know, also, there'll probably be some new patients coming in the next few months, too, because of that. But it's good.
It's always busier towards the second half of the year. You know, deductibles are met, the offices just start getting filled. So you know, it's a time when everything kind of picks up all across the board. So,
it's true.
But
how
also
are you doing?
Means I'm doing good. I'm hanging in there. you know, trying to enjoy the last few days of summer out here in LA. But I can't complain. Can't complain.
It's not going to be that cold there, man. It's not going to even get that cold there.
Hey, you know, coming from Miami, it's a little colder, you know? So something I'm getting used to, that the winter will be, you know, not all-time shorts weather. But you know what I am excited about?
Football season?
Two weeks down till NFL Sunday kickoff, man.
Oh, man, my Giants are starting to look good. I'm starting to believe, dude. How about your Steelers?
I think they're going to be okay. Kenny Pickett looked really awesome during the preseason.
The Pickett to Pickens.
Be good. That connection's there. We got TJ Watt. But, you know, the division's tough. Joe Burrow. You know, Deshaun
Watson.
Ravens
are going to be good.
We'll see. And then, of course,
the Ravens
Lamar Jackson.
Are good.
But, you know, Danny Jones, he's looking good.
Danny Dimes looks good. They made some big moves. I think they can make the playoffs again. That's all I'm going to say.
I think they're a lock for the playoffs. But you know, Giants and Steelers, we've talked about it on previous episodes. Playoffs aren't good enough, right?
Correct.
We're championship caliber teams. Sorry to all you know, Jets fans,
Browns
Vikings,
fans,
whatever.
Jets fans, yeah, Vikings fans. You know, unfortunately, Chicago Bears fans are now in that category.
Yeah. There's just a different level when we come to championship caliber teams, but. That's a topic for another day.
Exactly. But I can't wait. College football starts next week. So
Don't talk to me about college football. Don't talk to me about college football.
It's going
to
be your team Cal is just going to be enjoy this
last
year.
It's
Cal being relevant in any capacity because I don't know what's going to happen to them after this year. They're just going to disappear into the ether probably.
such a sad development in the Pac-12, but yeah, they got what they deserved.
You know, I got to say, I tried to watch the game last night. How dumb is the Pac-12? I tried to watch the game. It's not a nationally televised game. The USC game was not a nationally televised game. You're the only game on, and you're not a nationally televised game. Pac-12 Network. Like, I didn't watch the game because of that. So dumb.
Yeah, it used to be a thing to have, like, these after-dark games. East Coast, you could watch these late-night great USC games nationally televised, but they tried to tie all that stuff up, and...
makes it hard to watch, and that's why you get it. USC wants to be on a national platform. They don't want to be on the Pac-12 only network. You know?
Big Ten. Yeah. Big Ten, baby. Yeah. Love the Big Ten. Yeah. Big Ten guy. All right, man. But yeah, this is a good episode, though. You know, I think that what's really important about this episode, you know, is a lot of people, a lot of patients, including us, you know, we all like to do our own research, and we have access to so much at our fingertips in terms of social media, just the internet in general, talking with people, talking with friends. And we kind of really cover all of this stuff with Dr. David Kanes, who is really a fantastic physician who really has a lot of thoughts about, you know, education. And so he's an associate professor at Lehigh Hospital and Medical Center in Massachusetts, where he focuses on minimally invasive surgical oncology. He's also the founder of WellPrepped. It's a doctor-to-patient content distribution platform that helps doctors provide their patients with curated and accurate educational resources pertaining to their health concerns. So, you know, he's really been very thoughtful in this process. And one thing he's very passionate about is making sure that patients get good education on their health. And that's why we brought him on here. But it is such an important topic. And I'm sure, you know, and we've discussed it before. We're going to discuss it again. And we're going to probably be discussing it forever because, you know, this is something that patients need to understand.
About 15 years ago, you could say there's one search bar, the Google search bar. You go to google.com and you type and you look for what you're searching for. Nowadays, there's a search bar on everything. There's a search bar on your Instagram. There's a search bar on your TikTok. There's a search bar on Reddit. And so you have now access to all sorts of information, and there's content creators everywhere, such as this podcast, you know? And so it's really important that there is, you know, in this episode, we delve into it, just an understanding of how to go about searching for that information, and particularly when it relates to health, because you're not going to always get factual answers or answers that are evidence-based. And when it comes to health, you can't really take chances like that.
No, you're right. And we do kind of cover all of those avenues and finding the best way through all of those avenues, because believe it or not, I mean, you know, it's insanely overwhelming. The internet is overwhelming, and there's actually a lot of different good ways to get good information, but you have to be thoughtful in the manner, right? You know, whether it's a validated website for a society, or there is good information on Reddit, as we discussed. There's actually decent ways to use ChatGPT, as we discuss. You know, social media, there's ways to use it, YouTube. So there is value, and we're never going to, you know, I think to ever say that you shouldn't do your own research is ignorant, because, you know, I think we like having patients come in asking thoughtful questions, because it shows us that you're thinking about your health and you're willing to kind of do what's necessary to improve yourself. Now, understanding what is the right thing to do versus the wrong thing to do is kind of where this episode can be helpful for you.
100%. You're absolutely correct. You know, just because we were talking about all these places you go to basically look for information. Do you remember that story of the guy who on Pornhub basically taught math and got a huge following?
Yes.
Remember that story?
Yes.
So I'm thinking, I'm like, hey, you know what? You might be surprised at where you go, but there are places that you can still find really good, factual, thoughtful information.
Should we be putting this on Pornhub? Is that what you're saying?
I actually think that's where I'm kind of going with this. Maybe we should put Man Up on Pornhub.
Idea. Man Up on Pornhub. You know, Man Up on Porn.
For our listeners, reach out. Send a quick email if you think Man Up should be on Pornhub.
Honestly, I would love that. That would be great. I think it's not a bad idea. It's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah, maybe something we think about.
I mean, you have those dumb ejaculate volume ones, dumb, like, make your penis 100 times bigger ads, right? Might as well get you the real information.
Put our faces on
that. So, yeah. With the real accurate stuff. Not saying that we're doing that. We're not promoting that. But yeah.
But anyways.
Go ahead.
You know, this was a great episode. Awesome conversation. A lot of fun. And so, you know, let's get into it.
Yep. And as always, you know, download, subscribe, give us a review, 5 stars. That's always appreciated. You can follow us on all social media platforms at The Man Up Pod. You can download, subscribe. Also on YouTube is always appreciated. We're trying to really increase our YouTube visibility here. And I think that's about it. Enjoy the episode, everybody. As men's health specialists, we know guys are shaving their balls. Yeah, we examine a lot of you, so we literally see it, but we also have the data showing it, too.
That's right. According to research, over 85% of men trim their pubes. Not only that, but research shows that over 70% of women prefer a partner with at least partially trimmed pubic hair.
So guys, we know you're trimming the hedges, and we know that most women prefer you Manscaped. So if you're going to shave your balls, why not use the best men's grooming kit around? We're talking about Manscaped.
With the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, you get the Lawnmower 4.0 with their all-new skin-safe electric trimmer that protects your balls from getting those cuts we've all had in the past. You also get the Weed Whacker 2.0 for trimming your nose and ear hairs. And let me tell you guys, we all need to do a better job of this.
Yep, that's right. Kevin and I both have the Performance Package, and we really love it. Manscaping has never been easier for us. And for our listeners, we have a special promotion. Go to manscaped.com and enter promo code MANUP and get 20% off your first purchase.
Go get your Manscaped products today. Your balls and your partner will thank you.
I'm really excited to talk with you. You're so well-knowledged and well-versed, you know, on education, patient education, and how to properly educate yourself. And, you know, one topic, and I do want to start with this because I think it's something that I always think about and Kevin and I have talked about before, is that we know that people in general like to do their own research about their health. In 2022, 80% of U.S. adults used at least one social media site. 72% of adults use the internet for researching health information. And, you know, even more so, a recent survey showed that Dr. Google isn't really the only competitor out there now. It's Dr. TikTok, Dr. YouTube. And the study showed that before going to a doctor, 33% of Americans will go to YouTube, 20% will go to TikTok to solve their health issues, and 37% will turn to influencers for health advice because they think that they're more accessible than doctors. The most concerning thing, though, for me was that 50% of Americans have purchased health products after seeing an ad on social media. And, you know, this is obviously very concerning, especially from a healthcare perspective. Now, from your perspective, why do you think that Americans are so interested in going online for help with their health before seeking advice from a doctor?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very intriguing phenomenon. And just as an aside, Justin, Kevin, thank you so much for having me on. I've become a huge fan of the podcast. And in fact, I started playing pickleball last week after hearing you two talk about it.
But, thanks, man.
But we can talk about that later. But this is intriguing, and there's a few reasons. I will say, just as a warning, I mean, this is not an innocent problem, because the information can be damaging. The people who are providing it are sometimes selling your attention. But why do people do it? You know, I'm a urologist. If I get an orthopedic problem, I have to tell you, I do it as well.
So, same.
Yeah, to think about this, I just had to think about what I just did. I mean, I'm right now going through tennis elbow, not pickleball elbow, but elbow.
That's a Justin Dubin.
And I look online. It's a Dubin thing.
Yeah. Left elbow.
So one is accessibility and convenience, right? I mean, going online is super, super easy. And people want quick answers. So that's number one thing why I do it as a patient and why other patients do it. But then there's a sense of empowerment. You know, when you learn something, it gives people a sense of control over their own well-being. The next thing is variety, right? There's a ton of different sources. And so people are bound to find something that's relatable. Some people like learning by watching, some like learning by listening, and it's all out there for the taking. And then there's trust. People trust influencers. And, you know, it's funny, we're always influenced by the latest book that you're reading, but I'm reading Influence by Cialdini.
I think I've read
about
that. It's great.
Yeah. And there's a part in there where he talks about how, you know, we tend to put a lot of stock in what celebrities or even what physically attractive people say. We assume that they're smart and knowledgeable. That's all over social media. So we trust people whether we should or not. But then there's a whole privacy aspect to this. You can gather some preliminary information about your condition before revealing your identity and before bothering your doctor, mm-hmm. who is like an authority figure. And it's cheap. It's free, right? Usually it's free. But ultimately, I think the problem that we're probably going to flesh out is that the web is very impersonal. So, you know, ultimately the doctor is the one who can focus on people's individual needs. But for me, those five or six things are the reason why this phenomenon exists.
I totally agree. And I think when it comes to it for men's health issues, I think the privacy is a really big issue. This is like preliminary data. We submitted an abstract to the Sexual Medicine Society, but we asked men under 40, you know, who take erectile dysfunction medications, how they get them. We ask them how they get them, what they prioritize in deciding on these things. And above convenience, above cost, privacy was number one. So I think that is a really, really important point here. And the internet gives you privacy.
And so is the number one answer that they go online?
A lot of them, if I recall, the answer was that they were getting it from their about 38% of men under the age of 40, and this is prelim data, we're getting more data as we speak, but I think about 38% have gotten it under the age of 40, have used it. I think the majority is actually from a primary care doctor at some point, but there are gatekeepers, but you know, the N is, we're trying to get the N higher, but very interesting stuff. I mean, just thinking of that idea of privacy, I didn't think that would be so valuable to people above cost and convenience, but you know, that's right. What we learn. We're going to pause it here for 1 second, just because I think Kevin is very lagged.
All right. So the main issue here is that most health information online just stinks. They suck. And there are many studies looking at YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and they all consistently say that the most popular videos are the worst. So, you know, Dave, why do you think there is so much bad data out there?
Yeah, there's definitely bad data. And there's a number of factors. For me, the number one thing is the algorithm and clickbait. I mean, the web, when it comes down to it, is just all about engagement, right? It's not really about quality, although, right. mm-hmm. you know, high quality stuff should get engagement, but really it's more sensational stuff or entertaining stuff. And only the best content creators can combine those two. You know, Dr. Glaucom Flecken is one who's able to make something entertaining and accurate at the same time, but he's like a unicorn. But I think that's the main problem. There's no regulation or quality control. In some ways that's nice because there's such a low barrier to entry, but in other ways it leads to bad content. There's either completely ignoring science or misinterpretation of science. And I think that's a pervasive problem that's very difficult to solve. And then, you know, part of it is also, I have to say, on the patient side, and again, mea culpa, I fall victim to this myself, but confirmation bias is when you basically go out and you're looking for the stuff that supports the opinion that you already have. So
right.
Great, you know, point.
If I'm got this pain in my elbow and I really don't want to have surgery, I'm going to gravitate to the non-surgical things, and I'm going to think that's right, the right. best content. So, and then, you know, this ties into the algorithm, I guess, but a lot of content is sponsored and people are getting paid. There's money flowing around behind the scenes, and there's such a
that's
low.
That's the key to me.
That's the key. Yeah.
And then I think money is just what drives all of it. I think half right. of it is people want to make money. How do they make money? Well, they get more views, they get, you know, more clicks and whatever it or they're selling a product. And how do you sell that product? By getting more clicks, more views. I think the majority of it is money. People are selling bullshit.
I think
and that's
you're right.
what wins at the end of the day.
You're right.
I mean, Justin, I remember you, we had this conversation. You had listened to a podcast with Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
You know, this, he's amazing on YouTube. And like when you kind of, when he breaks into it, like everything's about how can you capture the viewer's attention within the first two seconds, right? And the algorithm is going to self kind of like keep pushing that up because they're like, oh, viewers love it. They're engaging it. And you can't really do that much with healthcare info unless you're, you know, sensationalize, you know, some of the facts, you know? And, you know, that is an area of concern because you're just going to keep seeing that self-populate itself until, you know, some sort of way, something kind of is done to kind of break that cycle, you know?
Yeah. Sure. And it's a difficult problem to solve. I mean, it's important for patients to try to figure out how to critically evaluate what they're looking at. And maybe some people might think regulation is the answer. I think this is nearly impossible to regulate.
Yeah, for sure. Now, that kind of leads us to our next question, which is really, you know, when assessing all, there's infinite online health content. We've already discussed most of it stinks. What are some tips and tricks that you have to determine whether that content is accurate or not?
All right. So I have about 5 or 6 tips that I use. And again, I try to use and I don't always get them all. But the first thing you do is you check the source. You want to try, at least for your first stop when you're Googling things, to look for reputable sources. Like when we say reputable sources, we're talking about medical organizations or academic institutions like teaching hospitals, Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins. There's a lot of reputable government agencies, like, and this is not because there's government conspiracies and stuff. But, you know, you know, the NIH and the Centers for Disease Control or the World Health Organization, those are all very reliable sources of accurate and evidence-based information. So that's number one. You're trying to look for the good source. And then you're looking for what we call citations. And citations are just references to scientific studies. Like when you, Kevin and Justin, when you guys say something, you often mention a study right in your next breath, which is great. That's how we can tell that what you're saying is reputable. And if there's no citations at all, it could be a red flag. And then the third thing is you want to look at the author's credentials. And that's something that's kind of maybe hard for a patient to do, but, are they a medical professional? Are they a scientist? Are they an expert in the field? Those kinds of credentials are more likely to support accurate information. And then maybe you found something and it's an anecdote. There you really want to be careful, because if it's one person's story and it's very compelling, it might be accurate information, but it might be completely misleading. And then, you know, the last two things I would say is most accurate information is going to run somewhere down the middle. It's going to be a balanced view. Like, it's not going to be totally one-sided usually. So you want to look for balance. And I think that's another sign of a really high quality source. And then you always want to end by asking yourself, is this person trying to sell me something? Like, could this person somehow profit from, even tangentially, whatever they're telling me?
I love that point that you made on the anecdotes, you know, because, you know, we all see that when the patient comes in as well. And it's a lot of stuff that you can find on the internet where it's like, well, hey, this worked for me. And it's just like, you know, it's a paragraph that's, you know, very convincing. Like, you know, you sprinkle some of these seeds on here and your, you know, your cancer will go away, you know. And but it's these things that kind of resonate, because, you know, I feel like people want kind of answers that are a little unique, that are a little bit non-traditional. So they will gravitate to these things and just kind of take that as face value, you know? And but I think the anecdote one is really important, because it's important that, you know, just because, you know, one person will say it doesn't make it factual or
long. Yeah, I mean,
I totally agree.
We've all had patients where you give them the whole landscape of how to treat their condition. Let's just say it's prostate cancer, because that's what's on my mind today. But you'll tell them the full picture and all the literature and all the data, and they will gravitate to just whatever their neighbor did. And that's human
Absolutely.
Nature. That's human nature, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I
can't tell you how many people, right? How many people have been like, well, I talked to my neighbor and I was deciding between surgery and radiation, and my neighbor got radiation. He looks cool, so I'm just going to go with the radiation route. Like, that's, I've had a lot of people talk about that that way. You're absolutely right. And there is something about that human experience. But just to go back with what Kevin also said, that anecdotal thing that you guys, I agree so much. Like, whenever I hear, you know, the phrase like, this is what the doctors don't want you to know, or like, this worked for me. Like, these are hot keys that they're selling bullshit. 1,000%
totally
selling bullshit.
Totally.
So that's just be something to be aware of.
Another way of saying that is, people want to I find, at least in my practice, people want to research themselves away from the standard of care, as if the standard of care is like some kind of scam that we're trying to enforce on them.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it's the standard of care for a reason, but people want something special that is a secret. By the way, there's almost never like a fringe secretive cure that all the rest of us are unaware of. Right?
Yeah. No. So I think you're right.
But people go down this trail sometimes, and it's a trap of finding that thing on the sidelines that we are all ignoring. That's probably not the case.
Now, you know, I want to go on a tangent, just maybe something that you brought up when you were talking about, you know, you're like, you know, look at citations, look at other stuff. I want to bring in kind of this X factor, and I've seen you've tweeted about it a couple of times. ChatGPT, all right,
great.
Enter
question.
In ChatGPT. It could like, you know, someone that's not in the medical profession now, could they log into ChatGPT and do you think they could get good resources or at least summaries of some of these citations, you know, on medical, you know, papers and stuff?
You know, I don't think so on the citation aspect. But could they get a nice pithy summary with no ads and no garbage that's probably pretty truthful? Yeah, actually, I think they probably can. I mean, I've poked around on ChatGPT to give me a summary of things that I consider myself an expert on, and it's pretty good. I mean, the few mistakes in there are not so bad that they would lead someone astray compared to a Google search where you're just kind of thrown out to the wolves,
right,
you know, hunting and pecking for yourself. What do you guys think?
Kev?
It's interesting. You know, when it first came out, when ChatGPT first came out, I was just astounded just about how, like, you could keep digging on that same topic. And it seemed like it was kind of almost reading my mind on where I wanted to go. What scares me is, like, we have no idea how these things are kind of, you know, being put together. Like, you know, where is exactly are they pulling? They're saying they're, you know, gathering information from all the data sources, all that stuff, but we don't really know, right, how they're validating it.
It's true. I actually, like, I tried that out. I've played around with it too. I've been like, what are the studies suggesting this for sexual medicine? And they quote studies. And I'll, like, go try to find the studies. I can't find the studies.
They don't exist.
I don't know if you guys have done that. Yeah. I don't know if they exist.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets scary, because you're just like, I was like, all right, I'm a medical professional. It's literally giving me citations, like you said. But then when I go, I was like, I want to read this paper, because I didn't think that this paper existed. I didn't know that this existed. And I'll go back and I'll be like, I can't fucking find this thing.
Yeah,
doesn't
no, it's
I don't know.
It is a confident bullshit artist when it comes to citations. I think citations are troublesome. But Kevin, I thought when you were talking, I thought you were going to get at the fact that it seems like ChatGPT responses are getting worse. But they are getting worse. Right. There's data that.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, they think that they might be throttling in order to save the best bandwidth for the paid customers. They may be throttling the computing power for everyone else. I'm not totally sure. That's just what I've read. But people have noticed that it was
awesome when it first came out.
It's like they've turned a dial to make it more conservative or something. I don't know.
So in conclusion, what's your conclusion about ChatGPT for our listeners here? Because once again, it is a free resource that is a new free resource for people trying to learn about their health.
I think it's hard to go out on a limb here, but I'm going to say that I would suggest patients try it out and they try to make the prompts as specific as possible. Let me give you an example. Please, let's talk about pickleball elbow again, but so please give me a concise summary of the overall treatment of tennis elbow at the level, at an eighth grade reading level. Like that would be a nice way of prompting ChatGPT. And I bet an orthopedic surgeon would look at the result and say, it's pretty good. Or maybe you're going to use it to launch your Google search. So you're going to say, can you give me some reputable orthopedic organizations that I should look
up? That's great.
I mean, so that would be a really cool cheat where you're not leaning on it 100%, but I bet you it would give you the names of the orthopedic organizations.
Yeah, I think
that's an excellent point. But you know, there are jobs out there now for people or in industries who are like uniquely like, how do you prompt GPT? That's like your job.
Yeah, to find prompt engineers. There's prompt engineers now. Yeah. They're making bank.
It's crazy, man. But I actually, I agree with you. I mean, the way that I think patients should use it, I think the way I see it is like, it's very good in generalities. Like you said specific, I think you mean like being specific in your wording, but your wording. I think that, you know, you don't want to be specific in like, if you have prostate cancer, let's go to prostate cancer. What's better, radiation or surgery? I don't think that that's a good one. Tell me about prostate cancer. What is PSA? Like, I think in general, like, I think those things are very good general stuff. When you're not delving insanely into data, I think that it can probably give you a better prompt. That's just from my experiences. But if you're trying to figure out, like, am I going to live longer with prostate cancer getting radiation versus like surgery? I don't think that that's probably going to be an answer because you also have to realize it's set in the past, right? It's not present data as well when you're looking really deep into data.
Right. That's a great point. I have one more ChatGPT tip.
Yeah.
You can get creative and patients should probably try this out, but you can give ChatGPT a parameter like this. You say, pretend you are a prostate cancer expert. Ask me questions to assess my understanding of prostate cancer and keep teaching me until I have a better understanding of prostate cancer. And it will actually have a dialogue back and forth and ask.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, you know, do you understand the genes? So it's not perfect. And, you know, I'm not suggesting it's foolproof, but that is also another fun way that a patient might turn ChatGPT almost like into a teacher, like teach me about blah, blah, blah.
That's pretty cool.
That's brilliant, man. I want to do that for other topics for myself. Yeah, like I can just sit there and learn about a topic.
It works.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that was a really great summary and important discussion on ChatGPT. But my next question is, going back to where I think most people get their source material now is actually social media. Now, out of all the social media platforms out there, you know, do you think that one social media platform provides better health data and health information than others?
I'll give you a lay of the land of where I think good information is on social media. I have to give some kudos, I guess, to YouTube because they have deliberately tried to head in the right direction by partnering with what they consider leading health organizations, almost like a stamp of approval. And they've actually, actually label, I forget how they do it now, but they label the video that it's a reliable health source.
Right. Okay? Yeah.
I mean, my only word of caution there is that while the facts are correct, these organizations are so conservative that they're going to be so inside the lines that they may avoid controversy to the point of being too dry, but at least it's reliable. So I think, you know, I think that's a really nice thing that YouTube did. I think on Twitter, and Instagram, there's a lot of healthcare professionals like you guys who are sharing trustworthy information.
And you.
Well, thank you for that. But I mean, I think the problem is if I turn around and I think, okay, but what if I'm a patient? How would I find these people? And I think that I don't really have good advice for that.
It's very hard.
That's the only problem I have there. I have to say, I've, out of curiosity, since COVID, I went on some urology subreddits. Have you guys ever gone on some subreddits? I mean, I learned so much about urologic concerns that patients have that I sadly was like completely unaware of. And these are very supportive communities. There are people give the wrong answers, but there are people giving fantastic guidance. And mm-hmm. So I would suggest that people try to find, and there's some big ones like Ask Docs and Science that are moderated by doctors, but even the niche subreddits, if a patient has a rare condition, they might find thousands of patients on you guys just did a cystic fibrosis podcast. Like
I was just on that Reddit reading about it.
It's amazing.
It's fantastic. It was fantastic. And it's so interesting because there's the mods are very serious. They all have cystic fibrosis. And they were like, listen, we don't support any, it's all conversational. Their goal is conversational there. They don't want anyone providing any marketing stuff. It's all about the patient-centered experience and comparing, their experiences and talking about it. It was unbelievable. I was blown away. I was just reading about it because I was interested since exactly like you said, we came out, we just had our cystic fibrosis episode. So it's a great resource.
Along those lines, and I'm not just saying this because of that podcast that you did, but podcasts are not a social media platform really, but I would mention podcasts in this context because if I was a patient, I would go on Spotify and under podcasts and I would search for episodes about the thing that I have. And if you take the cystic fibrosis episode that you did, if I'm a pulmonologist, I would want my cystic fibrosis families to listen to that podcast and hear about this family and this success story of a kid who is now an adult. I mean, how amazing would that be?
Yeah, it's true. And that's why we like to do those episodes, because I think it does give perspective. We've done Klinefelter's, we've done prostate cancer, because it does give perspective with medically backed, doctor approved patient experiences, which I think is the important thing, and while it is one of those things is this is what I did or this is what happened to me, it was with the help of doctors. It was never I did this on my own. I did this without the help of others. And I think that kind of, not to sound contradictory to the other things we talked about, but yeah, I think that podcast, and that's one of our goals here, is to provide a good, accurate resource for people from the privacy of their homes.
Right, absolutely. And you're doing a good job of it. What do you guys have any other thoughts on good social media platforms for health information? Or,
you see some stuff like kind of creep out. I know, I think there are people looking to try to form different websites now, or, communities that offer information from reputable sources. Again, on tangential, when you talk about Reddit, I don't know, any of you guys do this? When I do a Google search, and let's say it's like something's broken in my car and I'm trying to fix it, I type that in Google and I type Reddit at the end of it, just so that way I get
a lot of things. I do the same thing. I search on Reddit instead of Google for a lot of things.
Absolutely.
And I get a better, there's no question.
It's crazy. From my experience, I think for social media, when I look at social media, I don't think it's the platform that is the best source. I think it's the person or the talent or whatever you want to call it, the entity that provides the best source. If you want to find a good reproductive endocrinologist account, you need to find that person on on, it could be on Instagram, it could be on TikTok. If you want to talk to a good urologist, you find them on TikTok, you find them on Instagram, you find them on Twitter. Same thing with any topic, you know, tennis elbow, you find an orthopedic surgeon. We're at a point in the year of our Lord 2023 where there is a pretty good renowned specialist in any field almost on social media that is providing good, accurate data. The question is really just finding them on the appropriate platform. And you know, and that's kind of how it is, I think.
What are the pitfalls though? Because I know what you're saying is true, but are we selecting for the extroverted doctors who are willing to put themselves out there? Because that's a small subset. I mean, some of the personalities may be very likable with not great information. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are doctors who are like comedian doctors and do their thing that way, which is true. And they build a brand and they build, but you know, I can't hate on them for that. You know, I don't think that they're providing bad information a lot of times. Sometimes they're just not providing information, you know, they're providing entertainment. But I also don't think it's necessarily a pitfall because, you know, it takes time. As we all know, we're all doing our thing on social media. You know, it takes time and it takes, you know, consistency and it takes, you know, sometimes money. And so I don't expect every doctor to be online. It's not fair to ask every doctor to be online because truthfully, some people are better at it than others. And just like everything else in life, those people will become what they are. But if you want to do it, you can do it. And it's open access to anyone. But, you know, there is a survival of the fittest kind of thing.
That's true. I think that's right.
It's interesting because, so let's take a platform like TikTok, right? A platform like TikTok, which is very rewarding of these short content forms. And you have to really master how to gain that attention of the viewer, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you do the traditional doctor route and don't, you know, it's part of playing the game, right? And so we understand, hey, there's a lot of bad information out there on these TikTok kind of, on the platform. So how do we create content that is, you know, kind of will catch the eye, but at the same time, deliver that good information? We want to try to catch the algorithm, you know? And so, but that's just that platform for that game that's being played. Because if someone wants to play the Reddit, you know, game, offers these great conversations that gets the upvotes, that's another method that may be a little less like requiring the face-on-face kind of interaction. And physicians should be on there answering some of these questions and trying to get that up, you know? It's just a different game and getting that info
out. Since you mentioned that, by the way, I have recently started answering questions on the prostate cancer subreddit, and it's one of the most personally satisfying things that I do. Because people are so thankful. First of all, you swoop into this forum. People can't even believe. They're like, there's a doctor on here. And then somebody's been sort of like given not the best information. You get them right back on track. And they're so thankful. Right. It really feels great. I mean.
I agree. Yeah, I think I've gone on a couple of times. I asked stuff. It's been a really long time, but I a couple of my studies I've actually sourced through Reddit as a resource through surveys and stuff. Of course, there's inherent biases and flaws, but I always shared the results, and that was some of my favorite stuff because whenever I shared the results of studies with regards to people that were in it, I learned so much about how people interpreted data in ways that I never in my brain could have ever even conceptualized. So I always thought that that was actually a very, very cool resource too. So yeah, for sure. There's a lot of rewarding stuff that comes out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now on the topic of resources, let's talk about, you know, resources that us physicians, we kind of go to, and, you know, it is accessible to the public as well, at least doing a query on it, maybe not necessarily getting the publications, but let's talk about PubMed. So let's talk about a person. They're not a healthcare professional. How do you do a good search on PubMed for health information?
Yeah. So I would say this is not for everyone. You
definitely,
if you decide that you want to search on PubMed, this is the same search engine that doctors use to look up published research. These studies that are going to come back at you are not in layman's terms. They're in technical jargon. And so it's not for everyone. However, I do have patients who are up for the challenge and they will digest a scientific article and it makes them feel so much better and they get it. They understand it. So the first step is decide if this is for you. After that, you need to kind of understand the topic you're searching for, so that at least you can frame it in a category like, you know, mental health or tennis elbow, prostate cancer, vasectomy. To access PubMed, it used to be PubMed.com. I can't believe they took that away. Now
I can't believe they got rid of that. It's such a pain in the ass.
I know. I still do that. I still type PubMed.com.
Yeah.
So you have to go to Google, type in PubMed, then it gives you the URL.
I think it's .gov or something. I don't know.
Whatever it is. I don't know why they did that. And then there's a search bar that's going to pop up, and you type in some keywords like prostate cancer and radiation, or prostate cancer and active surveillance, or vasectomy and complications, or something like that.
Right.
And then a whole bunch of results are going to come up. And just like when you search on Google and you wade through the results, you're going to have to wade through the results on PubMed, and you'll see a bunch of titles, and you click on the title that seems relevant to what you're looking for. Now, again, you got to beware of your own confirmation bias. Don't just click on the titles that support whatever you think the answer right. is, which is something that we all probably do anyway as doctors.
Absolutely.
And then, so you click on the title and then it'll give you the abstract. The abstract is just a quick summary of the main points of the article, and you read through it and that'll determine if you think it's worth reading. And sometimes there'll be a button that says access the full text. A lot of these are behind paywalls, but often you can get the full article for free if it says access full text. And I have a tip for you, for patients. Sometimes there's something that says layman summary, and although it's not that common, but it will give you a layman summary of an article. And then I think the last thing to frame this is ask your doctor, you know, if you find something that you think is compelling, ask your doctor, is this a good study? And do you think it applies to my situation? And I don't think a doctor should be bothered by a question like that. You know, if your doctor's engaged, right. they should be happy to answer a question like that.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple comments here because I think there's a couple things that I think it was a great breakdown. But the one thing I think that I really want to highlight here is you have to realize we're at a point where research is being efficiently done in a very mass quantity all the time. And whatever your opinion is, like you said, Dave, like you can find a paper that supports almost any opinion in any matter at this point in history, right? You know, because there was always one point where someone said that's not the case. And then there's a general gestalt of, of what actually the situation is. And there are papers called meta-analyses, and I'm not going to take credit for this. You know, Michael Adut, who we had a podcast about before, he did recommend, you know, I don't know when in relation to this is going to come out, but he was like, he always likes his patients to look at meta-analyses, which are summaries of a lot of the literature out there, and they can kind of give you a bigger picture, or Cochrane reviews or also other ones that take a big summary of all the papers. And it kind of gives you a bigger gestalt of like, there is data that says this, this, and this, but overall the data says that this is probably the best option, or this is what you should do, or this is the outcome. And the final thing I want you to say is when you are searching something, there is a little tick bar there that says recent papers, most recent and best papers. I would always go if I'm a patient to always click best match, because that usually gives you the most cited, most popular papers out and available on that topic.
Those are great points. I especially the meta-analysis and the Cochrane reviews. I didn't think of that. And that is that really would save patients a lot of the work of wading through individual studies.
Yeah, especially the Cochrane reviews give you like a quick little summary in pretty much layman's terms in the first page, you know, of it in the abstract. So,
you know, but since Justin and I are a little bit newer to the urology world, if you search most recent, you'll probably find us there. So just for our listeners listening out there, you want.
That's true. Filter only by Chu and Dubin.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if we've ever we've published like maybe once together. I don't even know if we've ever published together, to be honest.
I try not to publish.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, Dave. So let's switch. How about we talk about healthcare providers?
Yeah.
Right? Healthcare providers. So like, you know, I'm on the internet, I have a health issue, and you know, I want to find the right healthcare provider, physician, you know. So how do I go about that?
Yeah. All right. I mean, this is a challenging thing to do. When I think about a question like this, I almost have to step outside of my doctor identity into like recent. We just had a whole segment where we said, don't listen to people who tell anecdotes. Now I'm about to tell you. Now I'm about to tell you an anecdote, right? But so, you know, a family member, God forbid, develops cancer, and you know, now I'm not a doctor. I'm like a loving family member. I'm trying to do right by this person that I love, and then now I'm just trying to be scrappy like my patients are, and it's difficult. So the first thing I want to do is acknowledge that this is a very difficult thing to do. It's kind of a whole fraught topic. Like, should you look at reviews? Yes. I mean, I look at reviews. Are reviews problematic in some ways? Yeah, there's ways, you know, there's ways to game the system. I mean, when I have thankful patients, I ask them, would they like to leave a review? And they say, sure. I mean, we all have patients who are also unhappy. Are we going to ask them for reviews? Probably not. I mean, so.
Of course.
But should you check them? I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, I check them. So the first thing is to identify what your needs are. But I think the best thing to do is to ask for recommendations and from friends and family, your primary care doctor. But you have to be careful about the way you ask. And a good way to ask is, you know, if you or a family member were going to such and such a specialist, who would you choose? You know, like this makes me think back to my honeymoon. We were in Italy, and at the front desk of every hotel, we would say, what restaurant do you recommend? They would give us the standard rec. And then we would say, no, if you going out to dinner with your family, where would you go? And it was always somewhere different.
Yeah, so, that's a great point. Great analogy.
The way you ask is important. And then similar to how we were talking about finding trustworthy sources, you want to look at their credentials. You want to trust your instincts. I mean, that's kind of a important one that's tough to quantify. And then you're going to meet them and evaluate them for yourself. And don't worry about moving on if it's not a good fit. You should seek second opinions. No doctor who you want to be associated with is going to be offended by your asking for a second opinion. So those are my sort of top line thoughts. But do you guys have any other tips on how to find the right doctor?
I mean, I agree. I think asking friends and, you know, family members that you trust, because that's kind of how the way I go it, where I'm like, oh, I got some eye issues. I'll be like, oh, I think that, you know, that friend had some stuff. I'm going to ask them, you know. But yeah, I completely agree, though, that everything's kind of taken in context. I do look like if they're like, oh, check out this physician. Yeah, I do glance. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is their reviews, you know, and you kind of add things in context and trying to just kind of when you make your decision.
Yeah. I also think, you know, sometimes to be honest, convenience is a real thing too. You know, I especially listen, everyone has jobs. We're not the only people who have jobs. I've literally picked going to my dermatologist because they were in the same office building as me. They didn't even take my insurance. I didn't even care because I couldn't. I literally just didn't have time to go to anyone else.
Yeah.
So like there is a level of convenience. I was very happy with them, and that's not knocking them. But, you know, access to care is obviously a real thing too. And some people across this country, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And I'd rather have someone go to a doctor than, you know, than not go to a doctor. But also I think the second opinion thing is a very big option, big thing, you know, especially when you're talking like Dave's talking about, you know, he does cancer research. You know, sometimes people ask us about our opinions on testosterone, whether we should or shouldn't do it. And I'll be, and you know, we all have been there and said, listen, this is my opinion. This is my practice. Like, this is how I would do it. If you disagree, please, like, I am happy to refer you. I can give you names and I don't care. I want you to be happy with your experience, and I want you to feel like you're doing what's best for you and what you're comfortable with. So I think being comfortable with your doctor oftentimes is probably the most important thing you can be.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, just to bring our conversation full circle, as I'm listening to you describe that, we've listed like 10 ways to find the right doctor, and it's hard, right? And then we wonder why people instead would rather want to go online and search the internet. It's so much easier, right?
Right.
It is. And then, you know, it's just very, very difficult. And, you know, the insurance stuff, even we navigate that too. You know, I go to Baskin Palmer for my eyes. That's because I know I've been going to them for years. You know, I have contacts and I like them to check my eyes. It's the number one eye institute in the country. I like to go to them. So why I chose my insurance? Because I like to go to them. That's the way I chose my insurance. And some people, you know, maybe that's their priority, right? Like I like to, you know, and some people may say, hey, this is the doctor I've been with for many years. I want to make sure that I see them. You know, and so I just kind of, you know, I think everyone has their priorities and they help decide their own thing that way.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, these issues of convenience and network coverage, and they're very real. But in the end, you're never going to know until you're with the doctor face to face.
Absolutely. Also wait times. Now you might have found a doc that you're like, all right, this is who I want. 4 months. You're
like, great point.
I don't really want to wait 4 months.
That's a great point.
It is a great point. But then you're like, well, they got a 4 month wait, so maybe I should be waiting that long because that's the doctor who has the 4 month wait. It's all mind games, man. It's all mind games.
But yeah, like, why does this doctor have a same day appointment?
In 5 minutes, like, I can go right now.
Having said that, I can get you in tomorrow if you're listening, okay?
Anytime between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Yes, exactly. Just come on in. We're happy to have you in my office, Memorial Healthcare Systems. We'd love to have you. But yeah, okay. So it's a complicated issue. But, you know, so I think we did a really good summary of you know, ways to educate yourself. But I think one thing, if we can do a brief run through for our listeners of an example of how you would properly do your own research at home. And, you know, here's the scenario we'll break down for you. I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. I want to learn more about my treatment options. So, Dave, walk us through how you as a patient would educate yourself on this topic.
All right. So you remember we talked about looking for reputable sources. And so I'm going to give you a shortcut here because I know what the reputable sources are, but I would go to the Prostate Cancer Foundation website, and they make you enter your email address and they let you download their prostate cancer guide. And it's a fantastic, trustworthy guide written in easy to understand language. And it's a bit of a long read, but it's worth every minute of it. And you would feel comfortable knowing that the information is reliable. And then, although some of this would be a lot of overlap, I would then go to the NCCN, which is the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And you can search by cancer type, and they have patient guides that they update every year or every other year. And it's also, it's a long read. It's like 85 pages, but
it's a lot,
but it's big type. And there's a, you know, a lot of white space and the last 20 pages are references. So it's not that, it's not that bad. And then I would go also to the Urology Care Foundation website, and they have fantastic resources about prostate cancer. So that's where I would start. And, but I have to tell you, I mean, in not so shameless plug, this is a problem that I personally identified as an annoyance that I had as a doctor at how difficult this was for patients. And so, you know, we could get into it if you want, but So I started a company called Well Prepped, which tries to solve this problem. And what it is it's a simple app and it lets doctors share basic information with the patients before they even show up to the clinic. So a lot of patients listening are thinking, well, what do you mean? Like the doctor visit starts the moment that I get called out of the waiting room. So I'm kind of trying to flip that idea on its head to say, no, you know, the doctor visit can actually start at home and I'm going to send you my favorite stuff. And you can start reviewing it before you get here. And then when we're sitting face to face, we can have such a better conversation, better mm-hmm. for you, better for me.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I feel so strongly, I get fired up talking about this, but it lets doctors put all their energy into the best parts of being a doctor, which is just talking to mm-hmm. another human being instead of repeating themselves over and over again. And, you know, patients should understand a lot of the times they hear a doctor explain something, that doctor has explained that in the exact same way about 1,000 times. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, maybe that's okay, but you want, when you have a conversation with someone, you want them to be fully present. And that's a moment where doctors kind of zone out a little bit. I mean, if we're being honest, right? I mean, We've got, you know, I don't know how many times you've explained the basics of testosterone and penile injection therapy. And I mean, you have your spiels for those things. So the idea is to try to mm-hmm. minimize that. So the cool thing is I have my own well-prepped page for prostate cancer where I get to assemble my favorite stuff. And I get to send it to every single patient with prostate cancer who sees me. So, that's awesome. What is on there? I'll just tell you what's on there, just as, you know, a way of understanding what well-prepped is about.
Yeah.
I have that NCCN guide on there. Actually, can I share my screen or not really? Because for your YouTube audience or no?
I do not know.
We've actually never done it before.
But I guess you could.
Yeah.
It says share it.
All right, let's try it up. For whoever's on YouTube.
That's cool. Let's try it.
All right.
This is a first. I like it.
All right. It's a man on podcast. All right. There we go. All right.
All right.
Can you guys see that screen? All right. So this is
it's loading.
All right. So this is my prostate cancer page. So a patient who's going to see me for this is going to get sent to this one spot. Can you see it yet?
Yeah, now I can see it.
Yeah. Okay. So on the left side, it's almost like Linktree. You've got your favorite buttons. And so I send patients to the NCCN patient guide, this prostate cancer podcast, a decision guide on active surveillance, surgery versus radiation, one of my favorite New York Times articles on active surveillance, some questionnaires, a PDF on dietary tips for prostate cancer. So for example, if they click on that, they get my favorite handout on dietary tips. And then there's a video carousel on the right, and I've got an explanation of Gleason score and risk groups and active surveillance and genomic testing and robotic prostatectomy and how to prepare for surgery. And then patients, if they want, can poke around and learn about me and all the other conditions that I treat. So what's really cool is it's almost like I can create my own knowledge base for everything that I see. So if you do penile injection therapy, every single patient could watch the edX video on how to do it, your PDF on injection therapy, a link to the compounding pharmacy. And what I'm just making this up off the top of my head.
It's doctor curated material. It's fantastic. Doctor curated. It's doctor curated.
Right.
So you know it's good because that's what your doctor wants you to see. And that's what they want you to learn about because they think it's doctor approved resources.
That's
which
right.
is fantastic.
And you know, I'm not suggesting I solved all the problems we talked about today, but it is a solution to all the problem of misinformation. It's just let the doctor curate
100%.
You know? So the cool thing is from the doctor's side that when you sign up, a whole bunch of seed content automatically shows up. So you're not starting from scratch. And that's all curated from what I thought was the best of the web for urology. So you're not starting from scratch. So a urologist could get up and running in 5 minutes and have some place to start, and then you can customize it.
I mean, it's a fantastic idea and just product that you deliver. I think I'll be honest, Dave. I think about you on a daily basis when I'm like on my third spiel, whether it be for vasectomy, whether it be for elevated PSA, or you know, whether it be for erectile dysfunction. And yeah, as a physician, I find myself just saying the same spiel. And to our listeners, let's be frank: like a doctor's time is finite. The way current things are, like there is like we're kind of on like a you know, there's finite amount of time that we can kind of have the discussion with you. And I feel like I am wasting a lot of my time saying the same thing over that a video that I could pre-record and just have the patient watch it beforehand and have a much more enjoyable conversation on the things that they probably want to know and not just these kind of usual spiels that are just kind of going over the generalities.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when you want to give your final spiel, let me know. No, but I mean, you know, what I love so much about this is it's something for the patient. We're not leaving it to them to search the internet yeah. all alone. And then it's something for the doctor where, you know, they can maybe open up some space for something other than those spiels. I mean, I really think that if a patient's seeing you for low T, and they can learn about the basics of low T at home, won't that conversation with you be so much more personal? It'll be something about yeah. their sex hormone binding globulin and their testosterone. And they already know the different ways that testosterone can be administered. So you can get right to the best way for them. And I don't know. I just think it's kind of a win-win.
Yeah, and I think it also allows us as doctors to understand the kind of content that's out there and really come up with a better understanding of what we think is the best content and provide, and you know, honestly, providing good resources for anyone is important. I you know, I also think about you a lot, and I have on my electronic medical record stuff like just YouTube videos ready to go if someone has a specific question or something like that. But this could all be curated to well prepped, as you said.
That's great. I mean, I'm psyched that you're at least doing the thing. It doesn't have to be well prepped, but you know, you're accomplishing it one way or another. So that's great. So how do you actually operationalize that? You made the videos and then you have
and
like
I make a
dot phrase.
I make a yeah I have dot phrases for everything. So if someone says if I see someone has low testosterone, I have a dot phrase with a video that I've watched on YouTube. I say, okay, if you're going to use androgel, this is the video. If you're going to use TR injections, this is the video I like. If sometimes they'll say, well, I don't want to do it this way, I want to do it in my thigh, I'll say, okay, this is the video that I like. And I just use dot phrases and responses based off of their, you know, I always just see what they want. And then by the time, like, I don't have to have that conversation ever again of explaining how to do anything.
Yeah. So
that's how I've optimized it.
And now out of curiosity, are the patients usually getting that as a parting gift on their way out?
No, only if they're eligible. So only if they're eligible. So it's like, you come in, you probably have one T level. I'll probably do a final workup. I'll get your full workup. When I get that lab result in the EMR, I have my phrase with an explanation how I want you to do it. And then here's the YouTube video that I curated for you.
It makes sense. It's a really nice use case. I mean, what you're saying basically is anytime there's something that you find yourself doing over and over again, you're like, I'm not going to do that over and over again
anymore. Correct.
Yeah.
And I've already established in my note says like, if eligible, patient will do this. And then it's never a thing.
Now again. Here's one thing I want to say to patients out there. If there's a patient who's saying, God, these arrogant doctors don't want to talk to us. They wanted us to watch a video.
It's a great no. point.
So, but here's the answer to that question. And it's not just an answer. This is how I really feel. A doctor can give their best explanation in that video once, and which means every patient experience can be the same as the best patient experience. Because here's what happens in real life. If you have that low T spiel, in reality, you have a 10-minute version and you have a 5-minute version and you also have a 30-second version, which does nobody any favors, but you're running late and you have to get out of the room. And so you pay lip service to that thing, but you know it's kind of a crappy explanation. And unfortunately, that patient doesn't get the best explanation. But you know what? You're seeing 25 patients that day. So that's not fair. Like, I think of this as elevating the experience for everybody.
I think it's a great way of looking at it. And I
completely agree.
I also think it's one of those things where you can tell me something when I'm thinking, if I tell you, like, especially when you're talking about prostate cancer, I tell you, you got prostate cancer, you're not hearing jack after that. And that's a fact. That's a fact. You're just not hearing anything. And that's why you often, you know, you tell people to bring a family member with you for these kinds of conversations, right, just so that you have extra things. But if, you know, and that's, I think, also one of the reasons why people do their own research, because they probably don't hear half of the stuff. When you're being told something bad is happening to you, you focus on that bad fact.
Yeah.
And you know, you shut down. Even when it comes to T or erectile dysfunction, men's health issues, guys are uncomfortable to talk about it, and they're already nervous, and they're just like trying to figure out how to verbalize these issues half the time. So when you're talking about solutions and explanations, I think sometimes it's just human nature. You just black it out, and then you leave and you go, well, I told him I had an issue. I kind of don't remember what the hell I'm going to do from here.
Yeah.
And you know, we get those messages. I get those messages all the time. It's like, so what am I doing? And I'm like, well, we just had like a 20-minute conversation about this, but you know, I have to remind myself that is a common thing that people have. So, you know, having online resources for patients and understanding as a patient, you know, we understand, you know, it's impossible to remember everything sometimes. And having an online resource that will repeat these things in a good, accurate way is also very important.
Yeah. And I think we need to remind ourselves about how, I mean, we're all altruistic, having chosen the profession that we chose. But think about other industries and how they handle repetitive questions. If you have a problem with PowerPoint, you go online and they have a knowledge base with the answer to every question that has been asked. They're not like, listen, all of the Microsoft employees, anytime somebody doesn't know how to change the file, the page size, you need to explain that from scratch.
Right.
Everyone. People be like, I'm not working here, true. You know? So I think, you know, each one of us is gonna, you know, my hope, my vision is that each doctor kind of builds their own knowledge base. And it's not instead of talking to patients, it's so that when they're talking, it's extra meaningful and extra personal.
Yeah, I think that's a good way. I think that's a good way to end it. I mean, Dave, thank you so much. So this was David Kames. Dave, tell us how our listeners can find you. Tell us where they can find Well Prep. Tell us everything tell us everything.
All right. So I'm Twitter's a good place to find me. I'm at Kanes David, CanesDavid. Well Prepped is a deliberate misspelling. So it's WellPrept.com. Well Prepped. I'm trying to buy the domain Well Prepped, but which somebody owns, but they're not answering their phone. So if you're out there and you own WellPrepped, please call me. But no, those are the two easiest ways to find me. I'm easily searchable online.
And where are you practicing?
I'm practicing at Lahey Hospital, which is just outside of Boston. And my practice is mostly surgical oncology.
And he's a fantastic surgical oncologist at a fantastic institution. So make sure if you have any issues, you can go get his care. Clearly, you can tell the guy knows how to educate his patients. He cares about patients. It's everything he's doing is patient forward. And that's why we had him on today. So thanks a lot, Dave, for coming on. As always, guys, check out the podcast. Follow us. Give us a review. 5 stars on Spotify, iTunes. Comment all you'd like is always appreciated. You can follow us on our social media platforms at The Man Up Pod on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Kevin, what's our website?
Our website is www.themanuppod.com.
All right. And so for Dave, Kevin, and I, thanks for listening. Until next time, have a good one.